Hello there, welcome to this week's episode of the Hinted Neuron podcast. This week's conversation is one I really, really enjoyed. I talked to Tobo Ray, she's the host of the Nigerian Queer podcast. We talked about queer issues in Nigeria, feminism, religion, and also homophobia in Nigeria. Tobo Ray is a really interesting person and an amazing human being. I'm sure I'll have more talks with her in the future. Also, my last episode for the year will be an AMA episode. So if you want to ask me anything, I'll answer your questions. If you have any questions for me, anything you want me to comment on, anything you want me to speak on, just go to hintedneuron.com/ask. Ask me your questions. Anything you want me to say on that podcast, just say it. Just type it there, hintedneuron.com/ask. It's an anonymous form, so I won't know who asks the questions or send the messages. So feel free, just type your messages there and or your questions there, and I'll see them and I'll talk about it on the last episode for this year. If you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review with 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Also, if you have any questions, comments, or concerns for me, you could always reach out to me on Instagram or Twitter at Hinted Neuron. And now, here's my conversation with Tobo Ray. I'm here with Tobo Ray. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me here today.
Yes, so I've been looking forward to this conversation. And I don't know. I don't know if the world is excited, but actually I'm excited that we are finally doing this talk, and you are here to talk about yourself and majorly anything that we'll talk about today. But, you know, for those of you that might be listening, Tobo Ray has a podcast, and that's where I found her. I messaged her and she agreed to come on the podcast. So today we'll be talking about queer issues in Nigeria. We'll talk about feminism and we'll talk about religion, society, and many other things. So I just want to leave the floor open for Tobo Ray to introduce herself a little before we deep dive in.
Why, thank you very much. It's actually very cool. This is my very first interview, so maybe I'm a bit shy, I don't know. But thank you for having me here. My name is Tobo Ray. Like you guys know, I have a podcast. It's called The Queer, Nigerian Queer, basically. I am in my early 20s. I just finished from school. I'm waiting to serve. I started podcasting just because I was bored. It's like the only thing I do for fun, mainly. And so far, it's been fun. And I'm just a very basic person. And I like the fact that I'm here today. It's actually something new. But being here is actually one of those things I was looking forward to. So basically, I'm just a normal, basic person, and I'm here talking to this amazing guy. So yeah, I guess it's going to be fun, I think. Okay.
Thank you very much. And so your podcast is basically around queer issues in Nigeria. And, you know, you talk a big deal about being queer and just your own story, which are really quite, I found really, really, really interesting. So I think one very nice place to start today would be just to highlight what is it like to be queer in Nigeria, since that's what you're all about, mostly.
Okay, mostly. Am I mostly all about being queer? Okay.
I mean, in your podcast.
Fair. Yeah, sure. Every time I get asked this question, I always have the need to want to like always defend myself. But I think so far, it's something I'm actually very aware of, and I really respect that part of myself. But I'll tell you guys one thing. It's not been easy. It's been really, really crazy. So many things you see every time. Even people that are very close to you have to deal with a lot of things. And I'll tell you, it's not been easy. Waking up every morning and not knowing what happens to you because you're queer, knowing that your future might just be, I don't know, but I'm just going to tell you, being queer might be fun, but at the same time, it's so messed up. But we're still here. We're still trying to just be ourselves. And I think we'll see what happens afterwards. Yeah.
Yeah. Tobo, you said being queer might be fun. Tell me what I'm missing out on.
Oh, my
what
God.
What we are missing out on.
Okay, not to be very, I think we have to be very, you know, mind our language, I'm guessing. I'm going to say something. Upon the fact that the sex is always amazing, way amazing. Something I noticed also about, you know, queer people or just being queer. I don't know how to say this, but I feel like if you are queer, there's this thing where you want to be better. It's like saying that something I saw somewhere where The girl was talking about how if you're black and then you're living in maybe, let's say, US or something, you have to be twice, you know, as you have to be twice, you know, like better than those white people to even meet up. So I think being queer, if you're queer, you have to always do everything times two just to measure up. So the fact that we're trying to really build ourselves, like to educate ourselves, to be very smart, to know a lot of things that might help us survive. I feel like those things, trying to learn new things every day, meeting amazing people. Most queer people are just so fun and like very, very intelligent people. So one of those things I look forward to every time I meet someone that is queer, it's how smart we can be. And those things could be fun. I really like smartness and it's something I'm happy about. I think being queer for me actually helped me. I had to learn a lot of things, educate myself, read a lot of things. And then so far, I think I'm still learning, but I think that's fair. Yeah. So yeah, that's the fun part, I guess.
Yeah, that's a beautiful story. And I like the fact that you brought up, you know, how you had to educate yourself and do so much research and reading on issues around this thing while growing up. At what age you think your own learning started, like majorly? Where did you start to notice, I need to start digging into these issues. I need to know.
Okay, this might be funny, but I will tell you. At that time, we had nothing. Social media, for me, as a young child, it was not something I didn't use a phone until I was in I was in secondary school, SS3 to be specific. So it was really hard for me. But having a smartphone later helped me. I think I joined Tugo. That was one of those things that actually helped me. So I met a lot of queer people like myself. And I noticed that, these people, I'm not alone. It was actually very scary. But meeting these people and knowing that, we have to, you know, communicating with them and then seeing a lot of things, a lot of terms that I was not really familiar with, I had to go. And so I think while I just finished from secondary school, meeting queer people on Tugo, knowing fully well that we have to converse, so I had to just really reading lots of things just to, you know, converse with them. I think it was just because, I had like a little bit of low self-esteem at that time because I was so very naive. But I think at that time, just leaving secondary school, joining Tugo, meeting queer people like myself, knowing that I'm not alone. So at that point in time, I knew that, I had to meet up, I had to measure up. And that was when I knew, talking to people, reading lots of things, searching the internet and many other things. So yeah, I think at that time, that's the... Yeah.
Okay, you mentioned about meeting queer people online. So I want to ask if these people were Nigerians or there was this active queer community in Nigeria at that time that was still quite developing online. Is that
it? Oh my God. No, I'm sorry. I had to laugh because it was, you know, on Tugo at that time, it was really weird because there was no sense of belonging. You just knew, these people are queer. There's nothing more to it. So I think they were mainly Nigerians, obviously. But at that time, it's just, we being silly, we're young, 16, 15, 14. So we're just teenagers. So at that point in time, there was nothing like belonging. No one knew anything new about hooking up mainly. People liked hooking up. You meet people like yourself. So basically, there was nothing. It was just the first, you know, yeah, there was nothing more to it. Just meeting people and just talking. We're young, basically, so I don't think it had anything to do with it. There was no belonging anywhere. It's funny.
Okay, one small question. Did you reach Grandmaster level in Tugo?
Oh my God, Ultimate. Yeah, I did.
You reached Ultimate.
Yeah, I did. I'm sorry, I did. I had to... What about you? Were you...
I never actually.
Never. Oh, okay. I feel very dumb now, but yeah, sure. Okay.
Not like you feel dumb. Like, I mean, majority of kids back then, I mean, Tugo was a shit back then. So I knew a lot of friends that were on it.
Yeah,
but moving on, I want to talk about queer issues in Nigeria because I don't really know if you are very much comfortable talking about topics, you know, talking about this topic, but I think one issue I want to address is on Nigeria predominantly. What do you think is one of these driving force that increases homophobia? Do you think is religion or culture? Because I've thought about it and I've tried to like think about what plays one of the huge, huge roles towards homophobia in Nigeria, do you think it's either society or culture, culture or religion?
Yeah, this is quite very interesting. I think some months ago, I asked this question on Twitter and so many responses. But the thing is, if you look at, I mean, as an atheist, I am, I don't really think much about religion. It doesn't really matter to me. So I would say for me, because of my own personal probably way of life or my beliefs and everything, I would say culture. So many times people use culture to act homophobic. And they always say the culture would not want this society. And I tell people, people make culture, culture don't make people. So you cannot tell me that, oh, because of the culture, you're the one making those culture, those things, those building up the society, being a part of the society mainly, and you always want to use culture to defend your homophobia. So to a very large extent, it's our culture. And I tell people it has to be updated. It is beyond outdated. So many things that we do till date, you see these things every time. And I know that it's not something that could be easily changed, but we as a people, we know better. There's so many things about our cultures that has to be really updated. And if you ask me, I'll tell you that the culture, our culture, a lot of things, I didn't want to start with how it could be very harmful. It could be very harmful. Many times, mainly if I want to talk about women, how we suffer mainly and other things. So homophobia, people hide on that culture mainly. Every time you see them talking about, oh, the culture would not want this, our forefathers, our mothers and everything. And I tell people make culture. So don't tell me that the culture. So basically, culture is something that we have to really work on it. I think if we start from there, knowing that our way of life as a people, there's so many things that we have to work on. We have to change. I mean, before now, people, they killed twins and then other things that happened, those barbaric things that happened. So I feel like culture is something that people hide under just to, act homophobic. So yeah, if you ask me, yeah, I'll tell you culture over religion any day.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And then on a side note, since you brought up twins, because people used to remind me, because in history class back then, when we talked about Mary Slessor, people used to remind me that I would have been killed if I was born in the olden days. I'm actually a twin.
Wow.
And so,
So how does that make you feel?
It doesn't make me feel any way, to be honest. I just feel like, maybe I was lucky I was born before then. I was born after then.
That's fair.
So I had this thought in mind because I know so many other people might have thought about this, because as far as we're concerned, queer people have always existed. But I was more concerned about the heightening of homophobia in Nigeria. Did you think, is that during the 2014 bill, I think it was 2014 with Goodluck Jonathan, where the 14 years issue, and because that was when people now started to talk about it, you have 14 years, because I think that was one of the major heights of, one of the things that really heightened homophobia in Nigeria. But what do you think about that? I have that perspective that this, that the time the bill was passed really played a huge role towards heightening homophobia.
I remember I used to have a cousin way back, and she told me something about, where she stayed or where she was staying at that time, she knew this couple, two guys, I think they were a couple, they lived together. Okay, the people knew they were together, no one really cared. I would not know if homophobia was something that was one part, prior to, before Goodluck actually passed the bill, but I'll tell you something that actually really contributed immensely to homo. At that time, people did not really care. People just knew these things were, and they just ignored it. If you ask me, because of those things I saw at that time, people did not really pay much attention. But after that bill got passed, I think that was what happened. Like, everything changed. People say, what happens if you check the internet? Too many bad things has happened to queer people. People getting killed, getting, beaten up, humiliated. So I still have this beef. I always say it's against Goodluck Jonathan. I think that thing it did actually made things worse for queer people. We thought we were really making progress, because it's okay to not see. You could tell me you don't understand you know, what being queer is, you don't agree with the lifestyle. Okay, you don't think it should be brought towards your, you know, where you are or whatever. I understand. You don't have to like me as a queer person. But what I'm saying is the fact that you can ignore me and I would ignore you. We could live like that. But that thing Jonathan did, if you ask me, it really made it worse. People now became aware. People now this hate, they were able to defend it, justify it even. So to a large extent, that bill that got passed, which I think about every time and I really shake my head, it was not worth it. I think that really made things worse. So we were moving forward and we actually got pushed back, way back. We became stagnant. Now things are worse. Queer people suffer every day and they will tell you 14 years. You might just, it's really crazy. It makes me sad every time I think about the whole thing. So Jonathan did not really try for us as queer people. And I think that really made things worse for us. Yeah. It was so bad.
That was really interesting because I want to get your as much of your own story as possible. In because I know that homophobia is predominantly online. I mean, it's easy to be homophobic online because, I mean, there's no, you could hide under an account to do whatever you want to and constitute hate or something. But tell me stories, if you have any, of where you've really faced homophobic people in real life and how that felt.
Okay, like my coming out story, like I said, if you've actually listened or if anyone actually listened, yeah. I'm not gonna try and justify or act like I'm not aware. There are some privileges that you face if you're a woman and you're queer. As a woman and a queer woman in Nigeria, my experience was, I would say, was really lovely. There was nothing like, no one actually came to assault me. Yes, you'd hear comments, you know, people would make comments or say things, you know, use the Bible to, you know, demonic and everything. Most times I laugh because they make joke and it's actually funny to me. But I'm going to say this now. I feel really awful for the gay guys in Nigeria. I think they face the worst. For me as a queer woman, my experience was really, really lovely. I got a lot of support. No one actually stopped, you know, talking to me. I've never actually... And to a large extent, I would say, yeah, I might be out, but I try to not really put it out there every time. You know, I don't have to, you know, I try to just know that, okay, this thing, people are still very hostile towards the whole concept and everything. So I try to be very careful. But so far, I'm going to say this now, there's been nothing. No one has actually stopped me. Even while I was in school, no one actually stopped me to say, you know, to say anything, you know, hurtful. So I think for me, my experience was actually very smooth and I'm really grateful, in as much as I cannot speak for other people that have actually had to go through a lot of things. But I'm really kind of grateful for the fact that I was not really a victim of anything. So yeah, that's just it.
Yeah, that even brings me to the topic of, because I noticed that there's a really quite supportive community of women online. Or the queer community. What do you think? Because the feminist community in Nigeria is playing a very big role, which I really see for the queer community in Nigeria. But I know you might have thought about it too. What do you think about like the role the feminist community in Nigeria have played and what they could still do?
Wow. I am a feminist. I have to say that first of all. And I'm a feminist because it's actually, there's no option to that. There's nothing, you cannot substitute anything for that. So I wanted to say that. And yes, I feel, you know, personally, feminism has actually helped a lot. I think the fact that the concept actually covers a lot of things, it's actually accommodates a lot of things. Although you see people say they are feminists, but when it comes to queer issues, they still have this thing. So I'm not going to say, you know, 100%. It's been very, you know, helpful. People still, I think, as if the worst thing in the world is being queer. Because even there's this, I don't know if I want to call names, there's this guy claims to be a feminist. And then when the issue of, you know, being queer comes up, he is always, I don't know.
Yeah,
but yeah, of course. But so far, I think that the concept, and I know we're going to talk about feminism pretty soon, I'm guessing, but it's actually funny that people would see something as amazing as that and still have to argue or debate on it if we should be feminist or if feminism, it's actually funny. So I am very grateful, everyone that's, you know, if you're a feminist and you support queer people, the battle, they fight every day. I see lots of people, a lot of feminists. And there's something about this feminism, you know, everything. The fact that it's actually accommodation is something I really, really love. When you accommodate people regardless. Feminism is just about, you know, of course, you could say women being treated equally. But when you talk about feminism, you see people, you see feminists actually defending men, you know, queer men, gay men, and all those other things. The fact that it's actually accommodating, it's actually helped a lot. And I cannot begin to be thankful because I'm actually part of that, I would say. So yes, my friend, feminism, it's something that I admire a lot and I respect it. And I've been a benefactor of that. And yeah, I would say it's been very helpful.
Yeah, I think like, because when we talk about feminism, the whole idea of intersectionality and just the very fact that people have different struggles and different backgrounds. So like intersectionality in feminism, that we could not like put feminism as one big umbrella for everybody. And then I just love the idea of intersectionality because there's Black women, there's queer women, there are different kind of people. And then we have to like account for that spectrum of people, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
But I might still come back to feminism, but one of the things I'm really interested, you know, to talk about is Twitter. I want to talk about Twitter, which if anybody listened to your first episode, I mean, your last episode, and I was really...
Oh, you did. Thank you.
I was really curious because you talked about the queer community in Nigeria and you put out some really... Well, some thoughts there, which I don't know, but you sounded a little bit, I think the word is angry. So maybe you should talk a little bit because, yes, disappointed. But I've had thoughts concerning this before because I do, for me, for people like me, I can't have opinions because, I mean, if I put myself as a straight man, so for issues around queer people and women, and I would be the oppressor. You get to, so for people like me to voice any kind of opinions might be really wrong. But I want to hear your own, because for people that might have not listened to that episode, your own thoughts on queer community in Nigeria, maybe majorly the ones on Twitter.
Yeah, like I said on there, I'm not going to really go into depth, but what I was expecting and what I got, you know, when you order something online and then you get, and it's actually funny. I was really disappointed. That's just the word. I don't know if I'm going to be, you know, offending anybody, especially if you're queer, you're part of the Twitter, you know, queer community. There's so many things that we have to fix. I know that as queer people, we face a lot of struggles. But within ourselves, within the community, there are so many things that just don't sit well with me. We know these things. It was actually fun. I'm going to say that it was actually, you know, the fact that I was on there and I met a lot of amazing people, like I stated. But there are so many things. We as queer people, you at times look at the things we do and you want to say, oh, this is why they have been. I'm not saying there are things that we do and you'll be like, oh, this is why these people face these things they do. Because even within ourselves, people still hate on each other a lot. And then you're fighting for your voice to be heard. You're fighting for you not to be silenced as a queer person. And then within the community, there are people that would still want to do that. It's a place where you'd see a lot of disagreements every time. I know it's normal for those things to happen. But the fact that it's something that... The beef, the fighting, and in the, having opinions and people. One thing I really cannot stand is the fact I have really strong views. I know for sure, but regardless, I'm someone that wants to be heard. Okay, I have my views, and I want you to respect them because I respect people when they say anything they want to say, as long as, you know, to a large extent, you're not really trying to disrespect me or hurt me in any way. So when you go on the community and then you see these things where people that are supposed to understand the concept or the idea of, okay, I want to say something. I want people to listen to me. Do not judge me. Let us, you know, all be one. Let us respect each other or one another rather. You see those people ready to just, you know, people are just very triggered. I know I'm queer and saying all these things might be, you know, me being a hypocrite, but I have to say what I have to say. When the things I saw there, the fighting, the blocking, the unfollowing, and then people just messing up, and then, you know, the fact that people want to silence you, you cannot have opinions that might not tally with the next person's opinion. And if you have those things or any opinion like that, someone is ready to just fight you. It's a place where I joined so that I could be myself. I could be able to express myself 100% without any limitation. And then going on there and seeing that people are just there to just argue and then fight and then talk about you're invalidating me. You use that line a lot. You're invalidating my feelings. You cannot have a preference because you're queer. I don't like, maybe if I say, okay, I don't like studs or I like femmes or I like stems, you know, people would come and say, oh, it's not supposed to be like that. These are the things that really troubled me. And then I told myself, I mean, before anything, I know that I'm queer, but more than things too, I don't have to belong to any, you know, be active, you know, belong to any, I mean, I'm a part of the community, but I don't have to always be like really directly connected. So I told myself, I want to be able to say things I want to say without being restricted. So I had to leave, and so far it's been okay. But I'll tell you this, the queer community in Nigeria, we have a lot of fixing to do, a lot of fixing within ourselves, amongst ourselves. And I think, I hope that it happens. But so far, the things you see every time, it's as if people just don't care. So I had to just, you know, I thought about myself and I had to just leave because I know how I could get triggered sometimes. So yeah, that basically yeah. They have to just, you know, try and fix so many things.
Yeah, because for people like me who are majorly observers and who are like onlookers from afar, I used to see like a lot of hate. So I've tried to rationalize that because most times I'll just feel like, okay, this is maybe what you are passing through as a person and you're trying to like point on another person. Okay, maybe that is understandable, but you know, that could happen one day. You get, that could happen like the next day. Maybe, but when it keeps happening like every day, I used to feel like, wow, this like Twitter is becoming really toxic for like most kind of conversation. Because look at this kind of conversations we are having now is a nuanced conversation. You could say something that might hurt me or I might hurt you, but like you understand the context and we could explain ourselves. But Twitter is never really this place for any kind of nuanced kind of conversation, and that even brings me to what I feel like, because I wanted to ask you why your own thoughts on cancel culture that has like swept through Twitter, like majorly.
Okay, cancel culture. I mean, this generation. The thing is, I'm going to speak for, because I was not really too active, I would say, on the street Twitter, because basically, but I would speak, you know, I would speak from the angle of the fact that I was on a queer Twitter and I saw those things a lot. I've never understood that, you know, that because you said something or you know, voiced out something that might not be something that the next person might want to say, maybe one or two things or three even, and then you hear people say, we're going to cancel this person without wanting to understand. It's about understanding. People are just ready to just go all the way, go all out on the next person. I don't know how to count this. I don't believe in that. I think everyone should say what they want to say. You cannot tell me because I said something, and in the queer community, basically, that's what they do for a living. That's what we do for a living. I'm going to have to involve myself. You say something and the next person feels like, oh, this thing might not be. The next thing is you're getting blocked or canceling this person. It's as if we you know, I got canceled on Twitter. Yeah, on the queer community. Yeah, I did.
Who canceled you?
The queer people of COVID. Yeah, I said some things that, you know, was my own personal experience and I actually voiced it. Maybe the way I said it was not okay, but I got cancelled. And I felt like this is not even okay. Just because I said something, I voiced out an opinion that troubled me at that point in time, you're cancelling me. So these things happen a lot. People forget that no one is perfect. And then people forget that people are wired differently, work. Complex people, human beings are complex, and you have to understand those things. You cannot just little things people do. You're talking about canceling this person or cutting you off, you're dead to me. That's what they do in the queer community. And I know myself, I said before, I have views that are very strong. So if I stay there, I'll get canceled every single day. So I'm not in support of that. I don't believe that that should even be a thing, because someone canceling of a thing, I don't care. I don't know how to cancel people. I think people should say what they want to say and think what they want to think. That's how I feel. So I'm not, you know, that doesn't really, yeah.
So right now you are pointing out a problem because I've thought about this since too. For people like me, I don't like commenting. I am mostly an observer. I've thought about these issues too. It's something I've observed day in, day out for most kind of communities online, even in any kind, not even in the queer community in Nigeria, most kind of communities on Twitter. But I've thought about it because if you could speak on it in the context of queer people in Nigeria, you pointed out your problem. Maybe you might have thought about, you said you need fixing. Do you have any kind of starting point? I mean, it might not be something that could fix the whole, I mean, it could be a fundamental human flaw. I don't know. But what do you suggest that people could do differently?
I suggest that people stop being homophobic. When you treat people, queer people badly, when you treat someone badly every time, that person tends to be very, uptight, very, very, sensitive and everything. But regardless, I feel like people should learn to accommodating other people. Someone that being queer, I've had to learn that, because most times maybe this is not okay, but most times I've had to accommodate so many things that ordinarily I should not have, because I understand that, people, I know this is, but the fact that, being queer, people would say, people be like, why are you saying this? You're queer and yet you're accommodating you. I can't show you. So I've had to actually learn that the hard way, that accommodating is something I really, really admire. I said it before. The queer people, we know that we face a lot of things, and it's not easy. Every time you pick up your phone, you see people being insulted for no reason at all. So when you face that every time, you know how it could. I mean, people might not understand, but it could get to other people, especially people that don't really know how to handle, backlash or hate. So when people do that to anytime or every time, it becomes something that. But then again, people should be accommodating. You don't know what the next person is thinking or what the next person I've had to face. As queer people, we should try. Yes, people might have opinions that might not be what you're thinking. Then we just have to, we're fighting a battle. I said it before, the battle is against homophobia, not, homosexual. So let's just try. Accommodation, basically, if we learn to accommodate one another, I think to a large extent, to fix a lot of those things that happen that should not happen in the queer community.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And because now we center on homophobia, and now let me bring about the issue of feminism. I don't know if you were very active during the NSAS time and you would be very aware of the Feminist Coalition.
Wow. Yeah. I'm going to be honest with you. When the NSAS thing, when it started, I was very indifferent, because I felt like maybe, and that was selfish. If I look back now, I feel like I'm queer. So far, police and everything, we suffer from these things every time. So now that straight people are facing this thing and they're coming out to voice out and everything. But then again, I looked at the bigger picture. It was not just about, police brutality. It was about bad governance and everything. So I'm just going to say that I really apologize to myself and every other customer myself, because we're just within myself, that I actually was so nonchalant. I feel like it did not matter. But later when I looked properly, I realized that we should. Yes, I wanted to just say that because it was eating me up heavily, I guess.
And what I wanted to talk about, because I don't know if you are aware of the Feminist Coalition.
Yeah, I saw. I think they have a Twitter handle, yeah? Yeah.
Yes, there was a time they were firmly in support of queer people in Nigeria. So, and that tweet, they made a tweet and it just sparked out like one wildfire of homophobia. You get across Twitter, you understand? They call it agenda. So, and What I saw that night, because I started to talk with my friend about it, and if we started to talk about the relevance of the tweet, whether maybe it was a good or bad idea or not, just because of what it sparked, you get. So we now reach something about how, because how Nigerians have, homophobia is something that, homophobia is as a result of years of social conditioning. You get years and years of social conditioning. We grew up in a very heteronormative society. In fact, people like me, we were brought up to hate gay people, or people like us, until maybe we started to like become more informed, become more aware, and you know, having, I don't know, maybe that depends on people who have liberal mindsets or not. But what do you think? Because as you know, in Nigeria, I thought about it a lot. In fact, me and my friend were supposed to have an episode just around that topic. What do you think? How could we solve these years and years of social conditioning that that people have passed have turned them to be homophobic?
Okay, first of all, I'm going to have to address the whole Twitter thing, because that week when that thing happened, actually I saw it from the eyes of, there's this very amazing YouTuber. I don't know if you know this girl on YouTube. She was actually a victim. You know, at that time when people were coming out, you know, everyone had things that were that was eating them up. You know, a lot of things. And then people when it came to, you know, homophobia and queer rights, people just flared up. Like people just changed. And I saw Nigerians for what they really, you know. I was sad. I told myself, okay, if you, there was an episode I made, I said, no more, you could be homophobic, I don't care. But that week I was so depressed. I saw it and I felt like this is very bad. So what I would say is, to answer your question, homophobia, I've told myself, I've made peace with it. As long as I'm still alive, or I don't know how many years I would live for, I don't think homophobia would, there's no fixing. If you ask me, there's no fixing. There's no reconciliation. It is what it is. As long as in Africa, in Nigeria, basically, I've spoken to a lot of people, friends, and then people that I barely know. And then I'll tell you this, homophobia, no matter what the people want to say, oh, I was brought up like this, the culture, religion, my pastor said this or whatever. But I'll tell you this, as a person or as a people, whatever, I feel like there are things you have to ask yourself questions, even within yourself. You know, you ask yourself, why am I like this? There's no, you should not always want to justify yourself using other things. So what I'm saying is, homophobia, it's something that would stay for a very long time until we begin to ask ourselves questions. You as a person, one at a time, there's no conference. We cannot say, okay, let the president come out. And even if they say no more 14 years or whatever, people would still hate gay people. You have no idea on how much people, someone would tell, I think someone I met, I was talking to this guy, and he told me that I told him I was queer, because mainly when I start chatting with guys, I always tell them, because I really don't like the whole stress of, you know, flirting and everything. And then he told me, he was a Muslim, and he said something, he said, if I was a guy, then he would, guys, they kill people, that is the only thing for if you're gay. That's what he said, you know. But he said, because I was a girl, it's actually okay, some sort of. And later he told me, he within himself, he cannot keep up with the conversation. He just told me, and I really admired and I really respected his honest opinion. But saying something about killing somebody, do you think homophobia would leave anytime soon? There's no forget about the past or what happened before, how people were brought up. Within ourselves, you ask yourself questions, why am I hating the next person? So I've told myself, homophobia is something that would stay. I don't have any idea. There's nothing. There's no fixing. We have to just keep trying to survive. I tell myself every time, living here is the only thing to do. Homophobia would stay in the next 100 years, 200 years. It would stay in Nigeria. You look at other countries and you see people making progress little, you know. We're going back. This week, just some weeks ago, we saw it, how it was. People were all fighting for the same thing, oppression. No matter the form it takes, oppression is oppression. And then people were there saying, when they draw the line, the agenda, when it became something else, when people started talking about queer people. And I told myself, I've actually made peace with that. And trust me, if you make peace with so many things or things that are difficult, it makes your life easier. So there's no point, there's no fixing of anything. It will stay. Just live while, if you have the opportunity. So that's just it. There's no fixing. I'm sorry. Maybe I didn't know. I don't know what else to say. There's no fixing. There's nothing we could do or we can't do about that. So
yeah, that's really interesting. You brought up something I actually wanted to talk about because light of what happened during the NSAS protest. Because I think because for someone like me, I had some very deep personal reflection during that time. What happened to me was that, you know, I saw myself like as someone who could be a victim for the very first time because when people come online to talk about their issues, maybe as women and as queer people, it's like people don't relate. You get people don't relate to those problems. So they feel, how would I put it, indifferent. They don't feel any slight pity. Maybe I'll put it like that. Or that would pity be the word? I think maybe pity. But for the first time, I feel like, okay, I saw myself as this victim rather than the kind of person who would have been labeled as the oppressor. You get? So it was really interesting for me because I started to notice that, oh, maybe these people will be really angry for the right reasons. Because most times I'll say, why are people so angry in feminist community? You get online. But during the NSAS movement, I had so much anger about what was going on and I was ready to talk about it. But for the very first time, I started to see, wow, this is what people face. This is why people are actually angry for, you know, from the problems they passed through. And it was an interesting dynamic because I did not actually, how would I put it? I was someone who was always talking about feminist issues, but like I've never really understood the anger as in first person. But I really hope, you know, going on, because I don't know if other people had that kind of.
I wish they did.
I don't know if other people had that kind of self-reflection about trying to have empathy for the anger that people come online to express. But then, yeah, it was a really interesting dynamic. But we don't have much time now, but I really, there are some things I want to talk about, like, your Twitter bio, which I found really interesting. I think we'll have a good okay. Laugh. What do you mean by atheist and a lover of God?
Wow. So I think the picture I have or how I painted God, sadly, might not be the same way most Christians or religious people might. You know, people, they paint God as a man, obviously white, probably yeah. Blonde and blue-eyed or something, and then sitting in a chair made of gold in the streets of heaven made of gold. And all that sort of stuff. Yeah. So I think, and then looking down, and I don't know, maybe has like a tablet. I don't know. Well, I think he sees everything according to Christians. So that is mainly most times that's the picture. If you ask any, you know, most Christians will tell you that. But for me, I don't see him as a man or as anything. I see God as a concept. No. That's very. It's just like an entity, basically. It's something that would guide your ways. I don't think it could actually, I don't know how to really explain this, but I feel like it's like saying that there's like an authority. I mean, you don't see those things, but it's there. So for me, the idea of God, the God I think I know, the all merciful and everything, I think it's just an entity, merely a concept. Just if you follow these ways and then you listen to the things he says, and according to how they paint this man, you see, you could live a very, you know, very lovely life, basically. So there's no man up there. It's just an entity, a concept, you know, people, you know, have actually painted over the years or whatever. And my picture of him is just someone that wants humanity to be okay. And then if people just look at him in that light, as far as I'm concerned, I think it makes things less complicated. So when I say I'm an atheist and I believe in God, it's just the idea of there's someone that wants humanity to be okay. And if you follow his ways, his 10 commandments and everything, I think you could live a lovely life. So there's nobody up there just watching and just, I don't know, it's just how I see it. So yeah, basically that was just it. There's no.
I found it very funny because, you know, it's just like, what do you call it? Maybe an oxymoron. Mm-hmm. So when did this light start to like, when did this idea start to dawn on you that I disbelieve and I doubt? And I mean, I think when did it dawn on you that I don't think it might be a good for me or for anyone else?
Okay, let me say this then. I was honest. I want to be honest. Well, you know, what actually triggered, you know, of course, I'm not supposed to say it like that, but one of those things that actually contributed is the fact that going to church, it's just me being queer, basically, knowing that if you are queer and then you know, Christians or religious people believe that we're going to hellfire. They do. Trust me, they do. So, and I told myself, I don't want to be a part of, you know, that. I don't want to be a part of any of those things. Okay, that's just basically me saying, okay, why I stopped going to church and everything. But for you know, being an atheist, of course, as I've said before, it's about learning, you know, educating myself and being able to analyze things, you know, be very critical, be very reasonable, you know, logic and everything. I had to, you know, that I really want to know lots of things. I mean, it's just adding up. So there's no one actually, I did not face anything bad in life or God did not abandon me, quote unquote. I just realized that this thing is not, there's no, so many things I see, the things that some, you know, mainly, you know, most religious people do, it's just not making sense to me. You know, going to church every day and then praying and then just clapping your hands and then, you know, prophecies, all those things, it just makes me very uncomfortable. So I just told myself, if anything is not, I need facts. You don't give me facts. You're just saying I should believe in, you know, based on faith and hope. I don't know how to do those things. So if anything is not like really, you know, I'm not seeing proof, you know, evidence and everything, I do not think I can, you know, even listen to those things. So for me, it's just, of course, learning, you know, of course, when I was younger, I used to go to church. I would sit there and I was very naive because I knew nothing at that time. So, you know, as I was getting older, I was learning a lot of things and then, you know, really educating myself, very important. I realized that so many things it wasn't adding up. So I just knew it wasn't for me. If it's not any fact, you're just so you believe, you know, you don't have to ask questions. Yeah. And those things were just I could not do them. So I had to just stay clear. And so far, trust me, it's been lovely, I would say.
So personally for me, I don't think I could like a title for myself. I'm not like, or most of my friends, they see me as one. Why? It's because like I tend to make a lot of critique about religion. So I've never really told anybody about anything.
Oh, so you're scared that people would judge you? Welcome to like, the queer community. Scared. Okay.
If I don't think. Question. Maybe I don't know. I don't.
So you're one sure. Leg in, one leg out. Okay.
So for me, it was me at a very young age asking questions and being told that when I be a good boy and I go to heaven, I will get my answers. Wow. You get? Mm-hmm. And that can be really disappointing for a child at that age. Or growing up and, you know, I started to do more reading and, you know, and you started to ask even more tougher questions. And then people now tell you it's because of the books you are reading that you are thinking like this or you're talking like this. So what does that mean? Do you mean I'm meant to deny myself of knowledge because so that I won't ask? Because you get, so are you telling me that the God who gave me this brain and gave me the ability to think did not restrict my own ability to ask these questions?
Yeah, that's why I always say when you begin to bring up, you know, you want to educate yourself, you learn lots of things, and you're trying to explain to these religious people that, okay, this is, and they get very offended as if knowledge is a sin or something. So I think I'm getting, I got that point. It's really something I've suffered, you know, I've had to deal with a lot because when you begin to learn, and you show them these things, so you just want to, they'll be like, do you know better? You know, just, I don't know, it's a bad thing to want to educate yourself. So I think I can really relate to that heavily. I've actually gotten a lot of, you know, people will tell you, you're doing over Sabi, don't ask questions, just trust God, trust the process. Oh, I have to know what I'm doing in this life. I cannot just be very naive. I have to just know. So yeah, I think yes. I can really relate to that.
Are you going to say?
Are you an atheist or not? I want to know. Tell me. Don't be shy.
I don't have to put any titles. I don't identify as anything because for me, I just doubt, and I feel that is like a good state. Doubt is like my default state for most things. I doubt, and I think that is a pretty good state to be in. Just doubting.
Okay, that's fair. I guess. Well, that sounds atheist to me, but it's okay. It's fine. We're not labeling you, so it's good.
I'm trying to be careful here, though. But then, yeah. But we should move on and talk about you as a person, because we talked about communities now. We talked about so many other things, and we've not really touched about you as a person. So what is it like to be Tobori?
Wow, man, how do I say this? It is tough. It is very tough. I'm a very, very complicated person, I think. I don't know how to have fun. I don't keep friends. I don't know how to be happy for so long. I don't know how to do relationships and everything. I just feel like I'm a very difficult person to deal with, honestly. But aside, you know, I think I am someone that I think I can be interesting. If I want to talk to someone, I could, you know, go all the way. I like to talk about things that people don't talk about. I like poetry. I like spoken word poetry. I like art. I like pictures. I don't take pictures, but I like looking at pictures. But I would say that I am someone that I think being queer again actually affected my social life. I could not fit in. It was something I struggled with. I'm still struggling with that. Maybe if I had real life queer friends, it would have made it easier. But the fact that I was just always, you know, all by myself. I mean, I want to have conversations with people, but mostly straight people having straight conversations. I could not relate to those things. So I would say that I'm a very, very, I'm always alone, but I'm not lonely. Yes. But I'm going to be honest here. I feel like I'm a very, I'm just very complicated and weird, extremely weird. So I don't know. I don't know how to be friends with people. I mean, so many things, but I think, but so far, I think I'm still very cool because I like things that are cool, I guess. So yeah, there's nothing to say about myself. So
you come off as a very interesting person. And because you talked about how you viewed yourself. Well, I think one really interesting question would be because from a very young age, how did you begin to view your own self? Because in terms of media portrayal, maybe in movies too, you might have watched movies right from your young age, and you know, just exactly. Your environment and you seeing people. Where did you begin to feel like I'm different, I'm queer? How, like, when did it like start to occur to you that I there's something off here, and this is like quite a different experience for me in my own head?
This is shocking, but I've actually liked a boy heavily. I think I loved him even. But I think I was way younger at that time. So so I'm not gonna say I've actually had to do that, although we're young, so nothing actually came out of that. But as I said before, I just knew. I knew that there are things that people were doing, girls were doing, things they found interesting, things they wanted to do. And then I could not do those things. And then anytime I tried, it just became so boring for me. Like, I knew it was just not adding up. And then I think, as I said before, Tsugo actually helped me. It really helped me meeting so many people. And then, of course, Grey's Anatomy. I know this is funny, but that show really changed my life. It was something that, when I saw this episode I watched, then I just knew. But when I was younger, it was really tough. It was really, I, you know, when you don't know something, it's so scary when you have no knowledge about something. I could not even understand. I thought I was sick. I thought I didn't know. Like, I thought I needed help and I could not talk to anybody about it. I knew liking girls, so I knew it was not okay. So even though I did not understand, I just knew I could not talk to anybody about it. But, you know, Tugo helped me, you know, meeting people like myself, knowing people like myself. And then Grey's Anatomy really, really changed my life. They made it so... I saw myself in those characters, and I'm always very thankful for that. I really love that show a lot, and I'm going to say that it really, really changed my life. So Grey's Anatomy, and of course Glee also really helped me. But I'm going to say this, it was not easy as a child, not knowing anything. I think about those things at times, and I still get very scared, because it was so scary for me. There was nobody to talk to. I did not know anybody that was like me. Yeah. I just knew it was really tough. But meeting people,
there was no internet.
Know. Of course, it wasn't easy at all. I feel it wasn't easy. But now I'm happy. You know, you could get a lot of queer people everywhere, and it makes things less complicated and depressing.
What do you think about movies?
I'm really, oh God, it's the best thing apart from. Sex, yes. And okay, we're not supposed to say those things, but movies, I love movies a lot. Series mainly. I love Lego series. I think it's fairly American movies, obviously. Portrays a lot of you want anything, you go pick the movie you want, and you see yourself, you could relate to the fact that you at times want to relate to things that, you know. And then it makes you feel like you belong somewhere. So I really love movies. I watch them a lot. Every day I must see like one or two movies. So I think something I enjoy.
Because what I actually wanted you to comment on mainly was your own maybe disappointment through the years.
Same as all.
Or the portrayal of relationships and relationships in movies. Because it's predominantly heterosexual and heterosexual.
Yes, yes. I don't know if you saw your tweet this evening. I tweeted. I so many movies came out this morning and I could not watch any of them because Tori is a girl and a boy. And trust me, I really get very tired. I really get tired. Like in a year, you could see like just two queer movies and then like over 1,000 like straight people movies. So it was not, most times I had to just sit down and watch them. And I really fast forward those things. I'm going to be honest with you. When it comes to, I know you don't understand. You would not understand, but it's really tough. It's really tough for me. So it did not help me a lot. Like I said, Grey's Anatomy was the only show that actually, you know, I had to sit down to watch it, because I knew that, okay, well, most movies I was watching at that time, you see a boy and a girl and, you know, people, just normal, those normal boring things. Man, I don't know. But yeah, it was not helpful. Most movies really messed me up even, so.
Yeah, I think I find that really
offensive. I'm sorry. Oh, okay.
Not offensive, interesting.
Okay.
Because I've thought about that too, and yeah, I don't know if I'm that worried because it's not my own reality, but Well, I'm going to ask you like just two questions now before I put you on the spotlight to say anything you want to say. What you think is like the biggest questions we could be asking now as society, as people?
I always want to speak from the eyes of, you know, as a queer person, but aside that, if you look properly, I feel like the society, it's really empty in terms of how people, you know, show care and in love. And understanding and respect. If you care for the next person, if there's no way you don't want to hurt the person, you would not want to, you know, lie to the person or do anything that would make the person suffer. So if we as a people, if we can just really care, like when you care, you really care for someone, we should be able to ask ourselves and really reflect and see how messed up everything is. I pick up my phone every time and I see hate. The people, even here, people just, you know, living life as if it's nothing, you know. So mainly, why do we not care? You know, why are people hating? Like, why do you not care for the next person? And if we can't answer that question, you'll find out people don't even know why. They just, it's human to be selfish. I don't know. I think it's if we ask ourselves, why do we not care for the next person? I mean, it will really, if our leaders care, if they care about us, you know, would not be this, you know, would not be like this. It's just about, we should care. We should really care. And that's just, there's nothing. If I want to talk about Nigeria and how messed up it is, we'll go on forever. But basically, if you care for anybody, anything, you would not want to hurt that person. So for me, that's a very, very important question. Why do you not care for this next person?
I think that's a really important question. And yeah, mm-hmm. I think we could have even more talks because it's something that would generate different answers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But my next question is pretty weird, but what is the meaning of life? Or what gives your life meaning?
People always say people, but I think it's self-fulfillment. You know, the fact that you can do the things you want to do, you know, live your life, you know, be you. The fact that I can just, I'm happy that I've been able to, I'm living my life based on the things I want, like on my own terms, even though it's not been easy. Just self-fulfillment, doing those things you want to do. You know, not really caring about the next person, what they think, basically. But for me, it's self-fulfillment. If you can live life, you know, in a way that you're self-fulfilled, I think you're really good. So that's what I aspire to do. I really want to ensure that I live my life and be fulfilled and be happy that, yes, I did not succumb or I was not really bullied into doing things I did not want to do. So for me, self-fulfillment gives my life very huge meaning and purpose.
Yeah, that's really well put. And I'm really glad that we are ending this conversation on the note of life and love and self-fulfillment. So I'll put you on the spot like now, as I always do for all my guests. You just, maybe for 1 minute or anyhow you want to go, just talk about anything you want to talk about, anything you want to tell my audience, anything you want the world to know. A lot of people listen to this podcast. What do you want to tell them?
First of all, listen to this podcast. I think he... My humble host is amazing. He's a very lovely person and you guys should really, really listen to him. I'm always an advocate for, you know, my sexual preference. And I feel like, please, whoever you are, I know you might not understand. I know you might be hard. You might not, you know, really get so many things. But please learn to open your heart a bit towards queer people. It will really go a long way. Just a little. I'm not saying you should marry any of them or, I don't know. Just please, just a little, just one little door window. Just open your heart to queer people, please. I'm actually I'm happy to be here. It meant a lot. I hope that I did not offend anybody. I was just trying to be myself and be honest as much as I could be. But please open your heart towards queer people. That's I don't want to use this platform to, you know, promote anything, but I as I said, it is who I am and I feel like people should really do better. So I'm also privileged or honored to be here to be on this podcast. It meant so much. So I had fun too. So yeah.
That was really, really amazing. And I have to thank you for coming on this podcast. And because for people that might not know, we're actually recording this podcast at 1, this is 1:18 a.m. just for info. Yeah. So
thanks for coming on the podcast. Yeah. You're welcome. Thank you for having me. Take care of yourself. Yeah. And thank you.
Thank you for listening to the end. Don't forget to ask your questions at hintedneuron.com/ask. Reach out to me on Instagram or Twitter at hintedneuron. Rate this podcast 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. That's it for me this week. And until then, stay curious.